We're live, gentlemen. We are live.
Oh, this is not just, this is being recorded live?
Yes.
No, it isn't.
Yeah, it is.
No, the fuck, we're not. We're not doing that.
We're recording it live.
Yeah.
No, we're not. It ain't going to no fucking YouTube or no.
It's live right now. We're recording it.
And we're recording.
What do you mean?
It's not a live stream.
Yeah, okay.
But it's a live recording.
Jesus fucking Christ.
Welcome, everybody, to the Stoned On Sports Podcast. My name is Wonder Matt, and I'd like to say hello to the black, to the white, the red, and the brown, but purple and yellow. But first, I got to bang, bang, the boogie to the boogie, say up, jump the boogie, let's rock. You don't stop, rock the rhythm that'll make your body rock. Now, so far, you've heard my voice, but I brought two friends along. And next on the mic is my man, Kyle. Come on, Kyle, sing that song.
Dude. Just do something more. Wow.
He's flummoxed.
Yeah, you're going with that? I couldn't keep a straight face.
Hi, my name's Kyle. Welcome to the podcast.
Yes.
What do we got today, Kyle?
Yeah. That was pretty good. Who sings that? I don't remember.
Your mom.
I'm supposed to talk?
Yeah.
Oh,
I passed it to you. How many other people on this podcast?
I told you not to pass things to me. Don't pass things to me. I can't start them. We already went through this last time.
You didn't have to start anything.
I said on the
next on the mic is Kyle.
Yeah, but he's not going to sit here and rap and shit.
You don't need to rap. You could just, I don't know, fucking talk. Hey, how's it going, everybody? Glad to be back here with you. We've got a great show lined up. You can't do any of that. No, you just, you sit there and laugh and talk about how you can't start shit. Ramey, what's the word, brother?
Oh, not much. Just coming off a long Memorial Day weekend. Looking forward to talking some NBA finals with you fellas. It's a weird time of year. I know that there's baseball going on, but with the gaps in NBA games and everything slowing down, I'm really starting to get some football fever. How you doing, Kyle?
Great. I'm doing awesome. Football fever, that same way. You know, it's the end of May, and I'm, you know, hearing about OTAs and reading about teams and reports and I can't wait for football season, and of course the Lions are actually a topic of conversation this year, and I'm a Lions fan, so really looking forward to the season.
Yeah, unfortunately good. They're a topic of conversation right now for all the wrong reasons. But still, you know, any publicity is good publicity.
Did they name the additional player yet?
I've not heard anything.
I haven't either.
That's got to be weird for you guys, right? Having expectations coming into this year.
Oh, absolutely.
Like it's got to be exciting though, right?
It is, but you know, usually it's, you know, the Lions versus the world and the Lions versus the refs, which is like the oldest rivalry in the NFL.
Detroit versus everybody.
That's it. It is strange having high hopes for the first time since the early 90s. At the same time, you know, I'm going to be cautiously optimistic. I've had my heart broken a few times by this team, and we'll see. First 6 weeks is going to be key while JMO is out.
Yeah. Look at us. Agreed. Already doing football talk at the end of May.
Yeah. Awesome.
Get that fix.
Yeah. Let's get into some NBA finals talk. Let's talk about something going on right now.
So, yeah, NBA Finals preview. We got Denver coming from the West and Miami, champions of the Eastern Conference over Boston.
Shockingly.
Yeah, Jesus. You know, they really shocked the NBA fans out there by not closing it, you know, a week ago.
Right. They're rallying in game 7 too. I mean, that's got to be tough, right? You're up 3-0. You think, okay, all we got to do is win one out of the next three or so.
Yeah.
And you don't do that. It's all of a sudden you're tied. And then you go into game 7.
Right.
All the momentum's on Boston's side, but Miami comes out and takes it. So
yeah. And nobody
in Boston.
Yeah. Nobody anticipated, you know, Miami to be here. You know, they're the 8th seed. They didn't have Tyler Hero. Matt, what do you think about the matchup?
Look, pretty much from the first round onward, when they took down the Bucks, then they beat the Knicks, and they took care of business against Boston. The Miami Heat have been playing with house money, but unfortunately, you go long enough, the house always wins, and that's what's going to happen here. Denver just going to be too much on the inside. Jamal Murray, an incredibly underrated yet elite player, showing exactly who a lot of people thought he could be, doing an excellent job hitting his shots, getting open shots, getting other people involved, getting them the ball in a spot where they can actually do something with it. That's just going to be too much for Miami. Quite frankly, I'll be shocked if they win a game, but I'll give them the benefit of the doubt and say they do. I'm going to say Denver in five, and not a doubt in my mind.
I'm with you on Denver. I think it's going to go six, though, because I know we talked about this before the Eastern Conference Finals, and you alluded to it as well. Miami is so overmatched talent-wise. Eric Spoelstra is a great coach, but every series they've gone through, from the Bucks to the Knicks to the Celtics, we've said, well, good luck. Miami's had a nice run, but yeah, this is it. And they continue to prove everybody wrong. So while I do think that Denver has the talent advantage and will ultimately win, I think it'll be six games. I think Jimmy Butler and that ragtag crew will get two games, maybe steal one of the first two, because they're a little bit sharper than the Nuggets, coming off a long layoff. I believe, it's going to be 8 or 9 days by the time finals actually start. So I think riding the momentum of the game seven win, they could steal that. Maybe game one might be one that you want to look for. But ultimately, I think Jokic and the Nuggets are going to win in six.
Yeah, I can dig that. I'll take Miami in the points and in game one.
Yeah. Yeah. I think five games. I think Miami wins one. I mean, just a few years ago in the bubble, they were, I think, a fifth seed. And so they have this underdog mentality. So I know they're going to fight. They just all need to show up, and that supporting cast needs to play even better. Duncan Robinson needs like a 20-point game.
So I know this is probably a little bit off topic. Not really, though, because I'm going to talk about Jokic. I mean, he came off back-to-back MVPs, and he was, what, runner-up this year? No, he was third, I believe, behind Giannis and Embiid. But if he wins the title this year, where does that put him amongst, like, the all-timers? Does that put him I think you're going to get a lot more recognition if you have an NBA title, but he's been the best player in the NBA for the last 3 years as far as all-around game. And this year, I think it's really shown, just because, Matt, like you said, Jamal Murray is finally healthy. So he's got somebody that he can consistently dish off to that's going to hit open shots. Not that they were a bad team the last 2 years, but with Murray hurt, it really shows what this team could have been for the past 2 or 3 years had he been healthy.
For sure.
Do you think Jokic is going to start to get the recognition he deserves?
I think so. I think when all is said and done, he's going to have an argument as a top three center, top 50 all-time player. His peak years here are just as good, if not better, than Shaq's ever were, and he's not the liability at the line that Shaq was. And when you're comparing favorably to Shaquille O'Neal, I don't give a shit who you are, you're doing something right.
He's a hell of a player. He should have won MVP this year, in my opinion. Just and being on the eastern side of the states, I don't ever watch as many Denver games. Being there on the west side of the nation, and just watching him a lot more in these finals, I'm super impressed with him. And he's just like an everyday guy. Now we're going to talk about a little baseball. We'll talk about a little bit of surprise players and teams, and some players and teams that haven't quite reached or lived up to expectations. Matt, what do you got?
Oh, a case of the giggles. Look, surprise teams. This one, call it a homer pick if you want to. I'm going to go with the Tigers as of the time of this recording.
Hell yeah.
one game under 500. They're a game out of first place behind the Twinkies. For comparison's sake, last year they were 30 games under 500. They are a top five defensive team, which really helps because their run differential is awful. Although here recently they have upped the scoring a little bit. They've got some pitchers hurt. Scuba will be back soon. Matt Manning, we're hoping to get him back as well. And E-Rod has been pitching great. Really a nice surprise all around with that team. On the negative side, the Padres have just absolutely shit the bed this year. They are not living up to expectations at all. They're five games under 500. They've got a negative run differential with when you've got that offense, that is completely inexcusable. We'll see if they can get it turned around in the second half of the year. I'm confident they can, like I said, just because of that that level of talent they have on the team. Surprise players. Bryce Harper, he came back 2 months early from having Tommy John surgery. Right now he's got more hits than strikeouts. He's got an on-base percentage over 400. He's even got a couple steals, which is surprising considering one of the big holdups there was to his return. Was just his safety with sliding. But so far, all signs are great. It's looking like he might start take the field here, playing some first base in about a month. For a negative surprise, I know it's been talked about a little bit recently, but Alek Manoah, he's just been hot garbage this year. He's got one win on the season. He's getting hit frequently. He's getting hit hard. He's walking players. And I'm not going to fat shame anyone, but maybe he needs to take his conditioning a little more seriously, considering he is a professional athlete. Hopefully, for the sake of my fantasy baseball team, he turns things around, but his ass is on the bench until further notice. Ramey, what's on your mind?
So I was reading something a couple of days ago, and it was an article that was talking about pitching injuries being up this year over the last year. And does that correlate to the new pitch clock, or is it an anomaly? I mean, only time will tell, but injuries are up significantly for pitchers, arm injuries to be specific. And it was basically just an article talking about, you know, is the new pitch clock the cause of this, or is this just something that's coincidental and happening? So that's one thing that stood out to me. But as far as a surprising couple of teams, I mean, I'm going to throw out the obvious there, the Rays. I don't know why I'm surprised by them, because they've been consistently good for like the last 10 years, but their hot start had just put them out so far. They're still 39-16 right now, and they're first in the AL East. But one of my other surprising teams are the Baltimore Orioles. Even with that hot start by the Rays, the Orioles are only four games back, and they've played really well, and they've got a lot of young talent that's coming up, partially because they've been bad for so many years. They've had some good drafts and some prospects that have worked out, but the Orioles are a surprising team along with the Texas Rangers. I think even with Jacob DeGrom being injured, that pitching staff with Nathan Eovaldi has really, really come into form. I know John Gray is also on that staff, and they've seemed to just have a lot of depth, and I know they've been hitting the ball like crazy as well, but to be first in the National League West is kind of a surprising thing when you see the Astros coming off a World Series title, and then also the Angels out there who are just desperately trying to put together a winning baseball team in hopes that they can keep Shohei Ohtani. Yeah, I know. He's going to go to the Dodgers. It's going to piss me off so much.
Yeah.
But as far as my bad surprises, I don't know if I said that correctly or not. I didn't target one particular team. I'm going with two entire divisions, the NL and AL Central divisions, who are both pretty much dog shit. I was looking up some numbers. The NL Central is 124 and 140 overall. That's a 47% winning percentage. I thought, shit, that is bad. But then I looked at the AL Central.
Yeah, it's bad.
They're 113 and 152. That's a 42% winning percentage. I was kind of trying to figure out why those two particular divisions are so bad. They've been notoriously weak over the last few years. And I know that Major League Baseball changed the schedule structure this year where there aren't as many divisional games. So I think these two divisions aren't benefiting from playing each other and having some teams that are out there with decent records. So they're playing teams in other divisions that are a little bit better. And it's going to be interesting to see with the change in schedule format with less divisional games, if that's going to have an effect, much like the NFL, where you have a couple of just dog shit divisions every year because they're just weaker than the others. And hopefully because my favorite team. Yeah. Yeah. No, absolutely. All right. I completely agree. My favorite team, the Chicago Cubs. It's a disappointment. I know I didn't say I had a particular team, but they're just disappointing. I went up and watched them on last Thursday, just get the ever living shit beat out of them by the New York Mets. And since then, they've just continued to lose. So even though they're last now in the NL Central, they still have a +4 run differential, which is kind of shocking. So, Kyle,
yeah.
What, I think I've talked enough.
Yeah. Well, you're going to talk just a second longer. What, since you went to a game, how was the in-game experience with the new Major League Baseball rules?
It was harder to get drunk because I was, you know, there's less time. No, I'm just kidding. It was actually pretty good. It moved really quickly. It was a cold evening when I was there. So it was kind of nice that we were in and out. And I think it was like 2.5 hours. And I'm not going to lie. We left a little bit early because the final score was 10-1. But I mean, the innings moved quickly. There was a lot of action, especially on the Mets side because they were just beating the hell out of the Cubs. But it was cool. It was nice to see, you know, attempted steals, base hits, more action in the game. And I know that we talked about that in a previous episode. It is a better overall experience. You're not just sitting there waiting for something to happen for an hour.
Yeah.
And it was a good game though. I mean, it was a good time to go and I feel like the changes are making a positive impact outside of what I talked about before, the pitching injuries possibly being an unintended consequence.
Yeah, MLB game times are down. Last year they were 3 hours, 5 minutes. Through Friday they were 2 hours, 37 minutes so far this season. So almost a full 30 minutes. So I think it's great. I love it. My surprise player is Eovaldi. Nathan Eovaldi, pitcher for the Rangers. Raymond, you just mentioned him a little while ago. I mean, everybody thought the DeGrom signing would have been – you know, the big signing, but think again, Eovaldi's looking like his, he was an all-star in 2021. So he's looking like that season. I think he was fourth in AL Cy Young voting that year. So he's 6-2 with 2.60 ERA through 10 starts. He went 6-3 last year, you know, through 20 starts. So he's already met that first starting pitcher with two complete games this season. The Red Sox got to be kicking themselves in the butt for not just re-signing him instead of, you know, Kluber, who coincidentally got sent to the bullpen this week. So,
yeah.
Go ahead.
Selfishly, again, me, because I'm super selfish, really happy that the Cubs passed on him as well and signed Jameson Taillon because he's just been lighting it up.
Yep. That's why we should be general managers of a sports team. You know,
yeah,
collectively,
absolutely.
You know, collectively, three brains. I should be able to get it done. You know, we'll have to get some nerds to, you know, retire to the nerdery with their calculators to crunch them numbers because I ain't gonna know how to fucking do that. But for my player not living up to expectations, pretty easy one to choose. Trey Turner just signed with the Phillies for 11-year, $300 million this year. And, you know, he's looking like absolute garbage compared to the last two seasons. He's
hot
one of
garbage
only
even
hot garbage. He's one of only two position players to top six wins above replacement in the last 2 years.
Hey, Kyle, how many bombing raids is that?
That's 27 because I'm bombing at this fucking podcast. Turner is struggling immensely with his plate discipline. He's striking out 26% of the time, up from 18.5% last year. And he's just getting eaten alive by four-seam fastballs. In fact, no batter has a worse run value against a single pitch. He's minus 11.
Any particular location on those fastballs that are giving him trouble?
You're an asshole. I don't know that. I was waiting for you to do something like that because I know you're just so fucking with your fucking baseball motherfucker.
Just make it up, man. High and outside.
Yeah, blowing away, high and outside. No, I don't know. You're going to fucking cut that. So,
we're recording live, Kyle. You can't cut it.
That's all I got. What are we doing next? This week's podcast, Pick Sixer, is our top six favorite movies. No genre, just straight up top six favorite. I got some good ones. I know Matt probably does. Matt, what do you got?
Oh, you would go to me first, huh? For me, number six, I brought this up before. I'm a huge Transformers guy, and the first live action Transformers that come back or come out, I don't know, it was like 15 years ago. It was just the cat's ass for me. Absolutely loved it. Number five, Gladiator. It won Best Picture, and I was surprised it did because kind of guy movies like that never do. And number four, The Bourne Identity. I swear it's on TV like twice a week, and I watch it every single time. Huge fan of Matt Damon in that series. At number three, I've got The Shawshank Redemption. Absolutely amazing story. I believe it was one that was written by Stephen King. Another one I watch every time it's on. Number two for me is Tombstone. Very, very quotable movie. Val Kilmer gives the performance of his life as Doc Holliday. Everybody's heard the phrase, "I'm your Huckleberry." And for me, the number one movie is The Big Lebowski. My absolute favorite movie ever. Amazing plot line. Really, really funny. Very, very quotable. And it makes you think a little bit too. Ramey, what do you got this week?
Yeah, so we're going to have a little bit of overlap, but that's okay. My number six is similar to your Bourne Identity. My number six is The Fugitive. While it's not one of the best movies made all time, it's on TV all the time. And it's one of those movies that whenever it's on, I'm like, I'll watch the rest of this. So Harrison Ford, it's a good movie, good action movie. It's one of those that if you're just looking to kill some time, it's a good one to watch. My number five is Happy Gilmore. I'm a big golf guy, big Adam Sandler guy. It was one of those movies really played to my adolescent mindset. It still makes me laugh when I see clips of it on TV. And it like you said, it's with The Big Lebowski, it's very quotable. So my number four is Step Brothers, another dumb one. I think you're starting to see a theme with me. I'm not that deep. Will Ferrell and John C. Reilly, it was right in that kind of stretch of Will Ferrell movies where he was just blowing up with everything he made. And it wasn't a movie that really gained a lot of attention until it went on DVD, showing my age a little bit. But it's one of those that I'll still watch today. So number three is The Big Lebowski. It's a great movie. Very quotable, hilarious. When I first started watching it when I was younger, I probably didn't get as many of the references as I do today because of my sick mind and how I've just gotten worse and worse as I've gotten older, but it's a great movie. Number two is Tommy Boy. Chris Farley in his prime with David Spade and Brian Dennehy, Rob Lowe. It's a kind of a, when you look at the time it was made and the cast members, it was kind of crazy that you were able to get some bigger stars in that movie. Raquel Welch, that's not right. Is that right? Yeah, that's right.
Is it?
She was the mom. Nope.
Which movie?
Tommy Boy.
Tommy Boy. Clearly, it's my number two favorite
movie. Who
was
the stepmom?
Bo Derek.
Bo Derek. That's right. Fuck. My bad. Clearly, I just saw a hot older lady and kind of glazed over, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, she was in the movie 10 with Dudley Moore. Which they actually, there's an Easter egg about that in Tommy Boy.
Like
10.
Yeah. Nice. My number one is The Shawshank Redemption. Great movie. Another one of those that's on TV a lot, and I'll watch it just about any time. It's a long movie based off a short story, like you said, Matt, by Stephen King. But just the acting, the overall movie, the story, the plot, it's just a fantastic movie. It's my number one of all time. Kyle, what do you got?
Yeah, the Shawshank Redemption novella by Stephen King. It's called Rita Hayworth and The Shawshank Redemption. You have been enlightened. Thanks.
Do you read a lot of novellas?
No, I have read that.
Is that the only novella you've read? Or have there been others?
Probably not. There's probably been others, so I can't think of any right now. My top six movies in no particular order is The Sandlot, baseball movie about some kids back in the 60s, and they're playing ball, and they borrow one of the kids' stepdad's ball. I shouldn't say borrow. They stole it, took it, and smashed it over the neighbor's fence, and it had Babe Ruth's signature on it, so it was kind of a hijinks coming-of-age tale of them trying to get that ball back. Spawn the phrase, "You're killing me, Smalls." I have a shirt that says that.
Never heard it.
Wow. Another baseball movie, Field of Dreams, late 80s movie, Kevin Costner. That's probably my favorite movie, baseball movie, I should say. Last year, where the film was shot in Dyersville, Iowa, the MLB staged a game there against your Cubs, Ramey. And they beat the Cincinnati Reds there 4-2 last year. They're not doing their one this year, unfortunately, because of construction. Next one is Pulp Fiction. I guess that's up there on my top 1-2 movies. I love that movie. Just watched it this afternoon, actually. 94 crime film, Tarantino's best movie, in my opinion. It's got a lot of stars in it, Travolta and Samuel L. Jackson, Bruce Willis. And it's a true modern classic. The plot occurs out of chronological order. So it's interesting. It's a thinker. It's, you know, like Matt mentioned, one of his movies was the most quotable movies. And I believe Pulp Fiction is as well. Number four, I like the bad boy crime. Goodfellas, 1990 biographical crime film. It's a Scorsese film. Narrates the rise and fall of mob associate Henry Hill from the 50s to about the late 70s, early 80s. Nominated for 6 Academy Awards, Best Picture. I believe Joe Pesci won for Best Supporting Actor that year. Next one, Tommy Boy, that was already mentioned. Buddy comedy film, David Spade and Chris Farley. I'm not even going to talk about the movie. You guys all know what it is. I just wish Chris Farley was still alive making funny shit. God, that would be great. And my last one is mid-80s film, Stand By Me, also based on a Stephen King novella called The Body. It's about some boys that they hear about a kid killed by a train, so they take a hike and try and find the body. It's, you know, one of the most influential films of the 80s, if not one of the greatest films of all time.
Is that where the quote, "take a hike," comes from, Kyle?
No. Every week we do a back in the day replay here on the Stoned On Sports podcast. Mine is this week in 1990, Ricky Henderson steals a record 893rd base, breaking Ty Cobb's American League record. He was among the league's top 10 base stealers in 21 different seasons. He is MLB's all time with 1,406 stolen bases.
When he broke that record, didn't he grab the base and say, like, "I am the greatest of all time"?
He broke Lou Brock's record.
Oh.
When he took the major league record.
Yeah. Yeah. Lou Brock's the National League record, technically still at 938.
Ricky talks in the third person. I forgot.
He's a better man for it.
And I just thought that was a perfect topic to bring up just because stolen bases are on the rise with the new rules this year. About 0.51 stolen bases per game last year, and we're at 0.71 so far through last week of this season. So,
hey Kyle, how many bases do you think Ricky Henderson would have stolen if the base sizes were they are today?
Oh Jesus, yeah, it'd be interesting to see how many times he was caught stealing, and kind of guess that. Okay, I'd say at least 60% of those would have been a stolen base.
So you're saying we can just get the 60% roughly of those attempts? He'd have gone over 2,000.
I'll go with 50%. I mean, I'm going to say at least half, you know, if the, what are they, 4 inches bigger?
Three.
3 inches bigger?
Mm-hmm. And 3 inches is a lot, too.
Yeah, I'll say 50 to 60%. I'll say 60%. Fuck it. 60. Yeah, no shit. For your back-in-the-day replay, what do you got, Matt?
For me, I was a dumbass and forgot to write down the year, but roughly 100 years ago, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled organized baseball is a sport and not a business and thus not subject to antitrust laws. Ramey, take us to school.
I did write down the date. In 1951, this week, Willie Mays hit his first home run. Ironically, it was also his, I don't know if that's ironic or not, but it was his first major league hit as well.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Well, first major league hit has to be something. Why not a home run?
Right.
101 years ago, Matt, it was in 1922.
I was going to say 23. I remembered the 20s, but.
And that first hit being his home run just killed his BABIP.
Fuck yeah, it did.
Yeah.
BABIP of zero.
Yep. Willie Mays, overrated.
Ah, shit. You didn't even get 700 home runs, loser. Holy shit.
We're done.
We have a podcast episode. Well, we have footage for a podcast episode.
Right.
All right. That's going to do it for this week's episode. We appreciate you stopping by and checking it out, although I doubt any of you listened to the very end. Don't forget to find us on social media. You can also find us on the internet at www.stonedonsportspodcast.com. Kyle, would you like to say goodbye, or do you want Ramey to do it first so you have a few minutes to fully work how you'd say it?
Yeah, no, thanks everybody for watching. Tell your friends and family, strangers, coworkers, you know, your aunt, anybody, doesn't matter. Yeah, pets. Yeah, we'll take a.
Fuck. Goodbye.
Yeah.